This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to our latest Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. Pete Sampson, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley coming to you from room 1208 in the Rosen Plaza, a day before the Citrus Bowl, Notre Dame versus LSU. We finished up all our media availabilities down here. There was a Coach Ed Orgeron, Coach Brian Kelly joint press conference that just wrapped up this morning. So now all there is to play a game and for us to make our predictions. And there's a lot of material to cover since our last podcast, which I think maybe even predated Kevin Stefferson's suspension. So with C.J. Holmes, Alize Mack, Deion McIntosh, Kevin Stefferson out for Notre Dame, LSU has a couple major injuries at linebacker. Also, Arden Key, their best pass rusher, is out. There are a million ways to look at this, and that's sort of what we do with bowl games because, much like the coaches, we have a month to prepare for our prediction. So, Priester, why don't you start? What's sort of the most interesting dynamic that you're going to be looking for tomorrow once we're at the Citrus Bowl?
Well, I do think that LSU's losses, I don't necessarily want to say are more significant than Notre Dame's because, I mean, Kevin Stefferson's a huge key for Notre Dame. I mean, Deion McIntosh wasn't playing, and Brock Wright was an integral part of everything. Yeah, Alize Mack, I mean, for his lack of productivity this year, that was a guy that was on the field a lot. So those are, Stefferson and him are significant losses. But I don't think as significant as LSU's losses at linebacker and in Alexander and Thompson, and then I guess they call Arden Key an outside linebacker as well. He's really a rush-in type guy. Those are huge losses for them. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how number one, how aggressive Dave Aranda is with two true freshmen at inside linebacker. You know, I think he'll probably stay true to his nature. But, man, when you have a couple freshmen running around out there, and they did play a little bit this year, but when you have freshmen running around there on the second level with Notre Dame's, you know, Orgeron mentioned Notre Dame's pulling guards coming at you, that's advantage Notre Dame. And so, you know, in terms of balancing lost players, I kind of give Notre Dame the edge.
You know, I throw in Claypool in that too, because obviously he predates him. He's not for productivity as much as he became a guy that Wimbush was looking towards.
I'm remiss in not saying him.
Stefferson, of course, Stefferson's the current difference maker that they're missing, though. I do think it's a chance for if Mac were not suspended, Mac playing. Not that he's going to have a breakout game in a situation like this, but he could be a guy that would have gone into a offseason with maybe he's the guy that catches three first downs and keeps chains moving. Now that's going to come up to Brock Wright, maybe Nick Wisher, possibly Cole Kmet. As you mentioned, Brian Kelly said he'll have a role. I do think the tight ends are going to have to catch some passes in this game because although I think Equanimeous St. Brown will beat press coverage, and it all comes down to Brandon Wimbush being able to hit him, I don't think, and we saw this in the spring and in the fall, the one thing Miles Boykin does not do well is run away from a quality corner, and I don't think he's going to be able to do that against LSU.
Good, no.
And I know I actually heard you on Phil Hauck's show mention Chris Fink and who else could step up. I feel like Chris Fink would step up if DeShone Kizer was the quarterback or someone that was a passing quarterback that could work with him in the timing of the routes and stuff like that. I'm also the mindset that it's got to be a guy like Tony Jones doing some extra things.
I agree. I think we're and I changed my opinion about that since then because in talking to Brian Kelly, they're going to have multiple tight ends on the field, maybe more than we've seen at any point this year. If they do get Kmet involved with Smythe, I don't know what that means to Wisher because he didn't mention Wisher, but you know, and Tony Jones, he actually legitimately said he'll line up as a receiver, as a slot receiver. So I think the dynamics of that have changed a little bit. We all think Cole Kmet's going to be really, really good. I don't know how prominent he'll be in this game.
Monday,
but
that's the difference.
You know, I mean, you kind of, why wasn't he playing? I mean, Alize Mack was struggling, although Kelly did say that, you know, Kmet had to kind of learn the physicality of an entire year, and he learned that through Durham Smythe. So a lot has definitely changed, I mean, even since the suspensions, just because of the use of personnel.
Yeah, well, I think with only Equanimee St. Brown among the receivers that I think you could bank on, that would lead you to more two-back, two-tight-end looks, because the fewer receivers you have on the field, the better, and that Tony Jones does line up a wide receiver there. I think with Cole Kmet, it's interesting because we actually got a chance to talk to Mike Elko and Chip Long down here for the first time since August, and Chip Long started talking about Cole Kmet. I didn't ask about him, but it was about how that Chip Long didn't really have an understanding of the demands on Notre Dame athletes academically. And he said that there was a meeting that Cole Kmet came into in bowl prep around finals. And he was just like, what's the matter with you? And Cole Kmet couldn't, like, he couldn't focus on anything. He was just like,
what
so,
happened to DJ Harvey with the basketball team?
He was just so beat that he had no energy at all. And I asked Brian Kelly a little bit about Michael Young in a similar vein. I think the second day I was down here about, you know, these freshmen.
That was like December 2nd, right?
Yeah, they look really good in August when there's no school. And then school starts and they vanish. Well, there hasn't been school for about 2.5 weeks. So I think that's where, if you're expecting Cole Kmet to maybe give you 2 catches for 27 yards and Michael Young maybe 3 targets, that's realistic. That's a lot more than they've done all year. And I think that is where Notre Dame maybe, I don't want to say could spring a surprise, but Cole Kmet, I was unbelievably high on him in camp and in the summer based on everything that I've heard. And everyone I talked to around Notre Dame feels the exact same way now as they did then, despite what happened or didn't happen this season. They think Cole Kmet could be a 3-year player good. So this might be an opportunity for him to make a mark.
I think it's interesting you bring that up, and I hadn't thought about that aspect of having the time off, because guys like, now they were winning games by a lot more, but guys like Fink, Kmet, and especially Young, and some of the younger guys, were getting targeted earlier in the year. I know it was mop-up duty, but they're still involved in things. Yeah. If you look at their targets, Chris Fink has been targeted 3 times since the Georgia game. That seems remarkable, really. Michael Young hasn't been targeted since the first Miami game. Guys like that, they just disappeared over time, and Notre Dame was blowing some teams out. So obviously, they weren't producing enough in practice, and that could be a result of other demands. But I guess we don't think about that as much when we're watching Michael Young run away from everybody in August, that it's not going to be the same thing for the rest of the season.
And we need to keep that in mind in future August. Everything has, it's a caveat. It's, he looks good now, but it is August, remember, and that can change. But, everything that I thought that I saw on film of LSU offensively has kind of been validated by some of the things that Mike Elko and Brian Kelly has said. Now, I was surprised when both of them and Brian Kelly, I talked to him about it yesterday, talked about how LSU is Navy-like in terms of having to be assignment conscious defensively, having to account for all the movement, and LSU moves pre-snap more than anybody. We've talked about the jet sweeps before. I mean, it's all a lot for a defense to take in. And Kelly said being during the regular season, SEC teams have 3 days of practice time to prepare for it. Notre Dame's had, you can say a month, but really like a couple weeks, because they haven't really been focusing on them the whole month. So, it's still a challenge, but I'm really excited to see LSU's offense going against Notre Dame's defense, because I think it's a great matchup. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The season finale for Matt Canada at LSU, and maybe the career finale too, which is another weird dynamic of this game.
It has to be taken in consideration.
For how much complimentary feedback we seem to get about Matt Canada's offense, Ed Orgeron does not share that opinion, and they're going to part ways after this game. It's incredible to me that you would sort of hit the home run hire, a guy that Notre Dame looked into before they hired Chip Long as their offensive coordinator, and he'll be out after 1 year. I don't know what impact that will have tomorrow, but it can't be a good one for LSU, at least.
No, it's not like he's a 10-year respected program member that's going out on a high note.
No.
There's something unseemly involved in this.
Like Pete Jenkins or offensive
coordinator. Right, and they're going to play for him. But right.
It sounds like there's a lot of pushback back and forth between Orgeron and Canada. I don't think anybody, one guy's giving it as well as the other one is. And And so I think it's a mutual parting of ways. Pete, you had heard stuff about Canada being unhappy during the season, and now we know that Orgeron's not too happy with the personality that Canada presents to him. So I don't, does that then impact their offense on game day? Does that impact the players? I mean, really, the relationship between Orgeron and Canada on game day doesn't really matter, right?
Is he going to run a jet sweep on 3rd and 22 out of spite? I don't know.
So that's an interesting dynamic. And maybe, you guys have all been watching the bowl games. Many times you can tell through the first 5 minutes of the game who's locked in and who isn't.
It'd be better if you could tell before the first 5 minutes
of
the game.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Although you have been able to,
I have,
right?
been kind of good here since I got... since I got to Orlando, my picks have been good. But... how that exactly impacts Canada calling the game for his players, it probably doesn't.
You think?
You wouldn't think so. Just an underline. All these weird things are happening, and this is why people don't care if Notre Dame's having guys suspended and stuff like that. It has to do with your preparation. It has to do with focus of preparation. Not everyone focuses on game day. There's no such thing as someone that's not willing to win on game day. Yeah. It's the will to prepare to win is what it comes
down
to.
And that's what I think. I mean... It's hard to find a better duo of coordinators than what LSU has.
No, I mean, they have the two highest paid coordinators, I believe. I'm pretty sure the coordinator of the USA Today sports assistant coaching salaries that Aranda is number one overall, and Canada is the highest offensive coordinator. Wow. They're both, I think they're both over 1.5. I know Aranda is at 1.8. To talk about Notre Dame's defense, to get back to that, and Mike Elko, because, again, we've had some access to him down here. I talked to Brian Kelly because I was down here on the first day, and it was just me. And I'd heard that, A&M had at least made a slight approach to him, and that there was some feedback around A&M that there was going to be some interest there. Kelly shot that down. Elko didn't want to talk about it the other day. But I think that Notre Dame is in a position now... certainly a defensive coordinator, I think an offensive coordinator, that their coaching staff, in terms of their ability, and I think the cohesion among that group is, I don't know if it's at a high point of the Kelly era, but it probably is at a high point of the Kelly era. And I do think, in terms of O'Malley, your point about the will to prepare, well, if you have coaches who are locked in, they're going to get their guys prepared. If you don't, then you've got a real problem. I mean, we were talking about Ohio State USC before the podcast. Well, USC looked totally unprepared. Well, their coaching staff is a little bit in flux. I think Ohio State is much more stable. And, Notre Dame's coaching staff is very, very stable, and LSU's looks like a total mess right now. So that's something I think you at least have to consider.
Speaking of that game, have you ever seen a more lopsided 24-7 game? I mean, USC had absolutely no chance. But we were joking before we started recording. Thankfully, Mike Elko is a defensive coordinator facing this offense, because if Van Gorder was still a coordinator, he'd give up 55. All the movement going on, the guys wouldn't know, they'd be turning around, they wouldn't be set at the snap of the football.
Although Van Gorder's a coordinator, they'd have been playing Army about a week and a half ago. They've been gifted this role.
There was a lot of talk about Chip Long and play calling during the season, how good of a coordinator he is. And then when you get an opportunity to speak to him a little bit, and Pete, you have, and then we had the opportunity the other day, I think he's probably a better coordinator than we realize right now, but he's got a quarterback that's completing 49%, and there are massive aspects of his playbook that they can't get to because of the quarterback's inaccuracy. And they had big plans for Tony Jones, a two-back. He's a good pass-catching running back. He hits a high ankle sprain early and is basically worthless to him throughout, most of the regular season. So I'd like to think that Chip Long, the combo of Chip Long and Mike Elko, ultimately is almost as good or as good as what LSU has to offer. But because of the shortcomings in personnel offensively, we still really don't know, or we still really haven't seen what Chip Long can do.
I think Notre Dame, if you're looking at the two teams, is trying to break down the overall improvement or lack thereof for Notre Dame versus LSU. You have a team that's won 6 out of 7 in LSU with a loss to Alabama. They played a competitive loss to Alabama.
Yeah.
In November, they allowed the following yards per carry. 3 wins in Alabama. Alabama averaged 3.2 yards per carry. There was a 4.1, 1.1 at Tennessee, and 2.0 against Texas A&M for that defensive front of LSU. Notre Dame, in November, I shouldn't say November, in the final three games, do you know how many rushing touchdowns Notre Dame had? Notre Dame's the best rushing offense we've seen here since 1992. Had one rushing touchdown in their final three games. It's remarkable what happened, really, and I think the reset button can be hit because of this break. It's no one needed a break more than Notre Dame. Now, is that an excuse or just the reality? It's not. I'm not excusing the losses. I don't think you should completely wear down every November, but it's not November anymore. And I think it's a reset for Elko's unit, too, because remember that rush defense, was it through the Wake Forest game or into the Wake Forest game, had allowed one rushing touchdown? Then they allowed eight
going
in November.
Miami.
Going into Miami. Oh, going to Miami, then they allowed eight. It's just a ridiculous change. That's not the Notre Dame team we saw all year. You would hope if you're a Notre Dame fan that's not going to be the Notre Dame team you see tomorrow. And I think it's a mild problem if it is the Notre Dame team you see. I'm not saying they can't lose the game. I'm saying if you see that team that folds in the fourth quarter, it's not going to be a Miami game again. But if you see a team that folds like they did against Stanford where everything, once something goes wrong, it all goes wrong. I don't think that is the true character of the Notre Dame team.
You know, it was Drew Tranquil who told me, and he's pretty upfront, forthright guy. You know, he'll give you an honest answer, whether it's an uncomfortable question or not. And he said that defensively in the front seven, they wore down. So that's not the case now. So it goes back to the break maybe benefiting Notre Dame more than LSU. And talking to Josh Adams, I mean, he's somebody that if his leg fell off, he'd say, I'm 100%, I'm fine. But Durham Smythe, Chip Long, Brian Kelly, Brandon Wimbush, Equanimee St. Brown all said Josh Adams looks like September Josh Adams now. Not November Josh Adams, who averaged 3 and change per carry, no rushing touchdowns, you know, one 100-yard game and 3 games under 50 yards. So, I mean, they need September Josh Adams to go back to something we talked about earlier with personnel sets, because it's Brandon Wimbush has not evolved or improved as a passer. To my eye, it's just been an inconsistent up and down season.
Which you predicted, but not to this extent. You didn't mean this bad. The highs and the lows were too low.
Yeah, the lows were too low, and there weren't enough highs. But if you're getting that Brandon Wimbush, like let's say he hasn't made this meteoric rise or major jump in December, then you're going to need a Brandon Wimbush 23 passing attempts or less. And if that's the case, then you're going to need Josh Adams, 22 rushes, Tony Jones, Dexter Williams, 15 combined, Brandon Wimbush, 13, maybe a Michael Young jet sweep in there or something. But it's, I think with Wimbush as a passer, it's going to require a discipline from Long as a play caller that he has shown at times this year, but he is itching to do something else. But I just don't think the quarterback's going to allow that something else.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I don't expect Dexter Williams to play any kind of significant role because he's not a pass blocker, and dealing with everything that LSU brings at you, the aggressiveness of their front seven, the aggressiveness of their corners off the edge. I just don't see, you know, I mean,
you're realistic.
Right, yeah, I mean, yeah, we have the head coach and offensive coordinator bring up Tony Jones's name, you know, seemingly out of the blue when we hear it. So I'm sure he's heavily involved. We know Josh Adams is, and I just don't think there are enough carries or snaps for Dexter Williams.
Just broke millions of our hearts.
Well, I mean, it's just...
What's the saying? Fool me once, shame
yeah,
on
exactly.
You. Fool me 12 straight times, shame on me.
You know, getting back to the defense wearing down in November, whatever the reason, whether that's the strength and conditioning coach isn't as good as we thought he was, or Notre Dame's depth or whatever, I don't think it was a matter of want to, because I do think that there's leadership on this team. I think there's leadership on both sides of the football. But, you know, two of the last three games are on the road, you know, where Notre Dame has struggled. And I just think that it wasn't a great defensive front to begin with. Mike Elko, being a very, very good defensive coordinator, was able to mask a lot of that, just as he did at safety, which is really, he did an incredible job this year. But at a certain point, you can't mask it all. And when you are worn out and you're at Miami and the atmosphere is ridiculous and you're at Stanford.
And they have since completely conceded that the atmosphere got them at Miami, just to point that out. People that do not believe that narrative. Drew Tranquil, Julian Love, Brian Kelly. I don't know who else you need to say it. Brandon Wimbush isn't going to say it because there's no reason for him to admit that.
Yeah.
They have conceded how bad, how they were overwhelmed by what
was happening. Well, and look at Miami since then. I mean, Miami has been an average team since then. They lost three times.
Yeah, that's not average.
Yeah. Okay,
they've only played four games.
Yeah, and you know, Malik Rozier looks more like Brandon Wimbush than John Elway the night of the Notre Dame game.
I think in terms of the things that, a couple alarm bells that went off to me today in Brian Kelly and Orgeron's press conference were pretty much all special teams related. Brian Kelly did mention about the safety play, which is a concern for him because Notre Dame safeties haven't been that good that year. But he said, you know, special teams is a real concern after a month off. But LSU has its own special teams concerns as well, which could be more directly points on the board, points off the board, if their field goal kickers undecided. And they're kickoff specialists as well. Not that Notre Dame is a dynamic kickoff return team, but you know, if you're shanking the ball out of bounds, then that's
yeah,
another issue.
I think that. I mean, I hear what you're saying on both sides. I think it ultimately is a wash because neither one's going to be very good at it. I hope Notre Dame doesn't give up a long return. And maybe Notre Dame's kicking game should be on more solid ground, but Justin Yoon hasn't attempted a kick in 5 to 6 weeks.
So right, but he's more reliable than the guy you don't know who's going to kick in for LSU. Obviously, otherwise they would have chosen their kicker.
Yeah. I do like, I feel like I'm saying maybe it's the same things that I've said over the last 6 weeks, but when you have all this time to analyze an opponent, I love their running backs. I mean, Darius Geis, everybody knows about Darius Geis, but Darrell Williams has 770 yards rushing, 9 rushing touchdowns, and has a better average per carry than Geis does. It's a great 1-2 punch. They'll get the football to them in a multitude of ways. We've talked about the jet sweeps with Russell Gage. I think all of that makes Danny Etling a way more productive, efficient quarterback than he has a right to be. This is a fifth year senior who, going into this game, they don't turn the ball over. They've only turned it over 8 times. And, you know, I mean, it's just like a bowl game for a Notre Dame safety to make a pick in this game. But I don't think that will happen because I think LSU's offense is so well schooled and so efficient. Not huge numbers. They're only averaging 28. They're averaging less than 30 points per game. But you know, we also have to keep in mind that
they're trending up on scoring, though.
Well, yeah, and that's conference play, and your conference opponents know you so well that it's more difficult to make inroads against them, who you see every year, than somebody like Notre Dame, who hasn't had to play an offense like this.
I think for me, it's, as we kind of spin it into predictions here, there are a lot of reasons to take Notre Dame, and there are a lot of reasons to take LSU. I think the issue that sort of sticks with me the most is Brandon Wimbush, the passer. He's averaging, I think, 2.3 turnovers per game in Notre Dame's 3 losses, and about, I think, less than 1 in Notre Dame's eight wins that he was part of. And I think for all the coaching theatrics with LSU, Brandon Wimbush is on the field during the game, and Matt Canada isn't. So I my pick is sort of a vote of lack of confidence in Brandon Wimbush. I'm going to LSU 26-23 in kind of a weird game. I think this will be entertaining, not stylistically pretty. I think it will be a lot more of a normal football game than the last time Notre Dame played LSU, which was just weird football. But I think ultimately LSU has, I think in some ways, you know, how often did we run across a defensive line that was like, yeah, I just heard about Notre Dame's offensive line all week and that gave them some extra juice. I wonder if there will be a dynamic of that with LSU's defensive line. I also wonder if there'll be a dynamic of that with Darius Geis and Josh Adams, because Josh Adams had a Heisman campaign and Darius Geis is like the best running back most people really haven't heard of. So I'm going LSU 26-23. I think it will be a game that will sort of validate pretty much what we already know about Notre Dame. I don't think it's going to be a game of revelations for Notre Dame, positive or negative. Brandon Wimbush is going to have to improve in a huge way as a passer this offseason. and Notre Dame's going to have to upgrade his talent at safety. I think those will be the big takeaways coming out. I also think whatever happens tomorrow, I think you would be making a mistake to think that Notre Dame needs to make any sort of coaching changes. I think the Elko Long dynamic with their coaches underneath them needs to continue to grow. I think it made huge progress this year. So I think that's the Wimbush safety dynamic. By all means, that's going to be an off season of sort of separating everything out and gnashing teeth. But I do think Notre Dame is a good place from a coaching staff perspective among its assistants.
I think you made a good point at the end, because if Notre Dame wins this game, it doesn't make Brandon Wimbush a better football player next year.
No.
If Notre Dame loses this game, it doesn't make him a better football player. It just makes the fan base a lot happier. Yeah. And I totally understand that. 10-3 is...
Which is significant Brandon Wimbush, who feels all of that around him.
If he plays well and they lose a great game, he just needs to improve over the next 9 months. And he needs to play one of his two or three best games this year for Notre Dame to beat LSU. A couple numbers to throw out before my prediction. Brian Kelly is 2-11 since the Oklahoma game as a road or neutral underdog. Now, he wasn't an underdog
straight
at all.
Up,
this
you're
year.
Straight up 2-11.
Winning the game. Yeah, I don't think people care if Notre Dame covers tomorrow. But yeah, 2-11 straight up winning the game. It's weird to think that, first of all. Now, that didn't happen all this year, so you could throw out 2018. But it's just part of the trends that are going against Notre Dame. The way LSU played at the end of the year and the way they looked defensively compared to the way Notre Dame looked, I am picking the reset button to keep this game close. If there was no reset button to Notre Dame being refreshed... If this was week 13, I would pick 38-13 LSU. I'm putting a reset button on Notre Dame. And I think Notre Dame, for 2 months, was one of the four best teams in the country.
Yeah.
I don't think LSU is anything like the team, say, they lost to Troy. Whatever. They couldn't have been less involved in that game, and that's not what you're going to see from LSU.
Yeah, and the film shows that they couldn't have been less engaged than they were in that game.
They didn't give up a run in excess of 28 yards this year in the SEC playing Auburn, Alabama, Mississippi State, but they gave up a 75-yard run against Troy. I mean, that was just not the team you're going to see. And I don't think that's the Notre Dame team you're going to see is the one you saw fold when it got tight at Stanford and not show up against Miami. I'm giving Notre Dame a little bit of the benefit of the doubt with a reset button, not because this isn't one of those if not now when things. I think Notre Dame is much better than they showed at the end of the year, and they don't have to be that team anymore. And I'm in that 27-24 Notre Dame range. I'm going to hate myself in the morning for that pick. It's not the not the first time I've hated myself in the morning, though. New Year's Day. Yeah, exactly. It's customary at this point. But Pete makes a great point about... This is why I already hate myself, and I can't take it back. Pete made a great point about LSU hearing about the Notre Dame offensive line. And it's not like a bunch of undersized guys hearing about how good Quentin Nelson is. It's guys that are going to be in the league. So it's a great point by Pete, and that's going to keep it closer for LSU. Okay. But the reset button is hit, 27-24 Notre Dame, and 10-3 is looked back as a success as opposed to the awfulness of an offseason.
I tried to press Brian Kelly yesterday about the difference between going into the offseason with a bowl win and loss, and
he can't give you an honest answer.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of lost on him. I'm not sure I asked it properly, but let me just give a little perspective about LSU. They won their last three games against Arkansas, at Tennessee, and Texas A&M. Those teams stink. I mean, they were bad. In Tennessee,
I think all three fired their coaches, right?
Yes, exactly. So
I don't
put a lot of credence in that, you know, because those teams were unorganized. What I do put credence in is LSU's run defense in general and defense in general, and how Notre Dame's offense and this great Joe Moore award-winning offensive line has done against quality defenses. Not very good. So, but you know, again, that's tied in with Brandon Wimbush and his performance. Does Greedy Williams get a pick of Brandon Wimbush this game? I think their cornerback is pretty good, and there's a good chance of that. I want to get back to one point real quick, Pete, that you made about Notre Dame's coaching staff staying the same. You know that a large segment of people want the quarterback coach to change, but that isn't going to happen.
Now, Brian Kelly told me all 10 assistants will be back.
Yeah, that's what he expects. That's not going to happen. All right, I'll cut to the chase. I've been making good bowl picks here since I got to Orlando based upon the starting theory. I start with head coach versus head coach. Well, when I do that with Notre Dame and LSU, I think Notre Dame has an advantage. But but I know too much about their coordinators, you know, probably more about their coordinators than most teams that we generally know. So what I'm trying to get at is I'm going to write my preview by the pool today because this is the first time in 3 days that we've been able to sit by the pool. So I don't know who I'm going to pick. I'll make that decision as the sun shines off.
That's why I had to make my first. Yeah. I didn't want the pool.
I look forward to reading it because, like, the coaching dynamic is interesting because, like, in your first rate series, if you had included LSU and you're doing a first rate of head coaches, where would you rank Ed Orgeron? 12th? I mean, ahead of Jeff Collins?
Yeah, it would. He would be. He would be behind. Sure. He would be ahead of all of the only those that were the least. Yeah.
Smart, Adazio, D'Antonio, Chuck Martin, Helton, Doran.
Behind Doran.
Rick.
Automatically, right?
Neomatololo, Shaw, and Wake Forest. Clawson. I would still have.
Even before 11th? This year, I would have had Clawson ahead of Orgeron.
So maybe ahead of Chuck Martin and Jeff Collins?
Yeah, you're right. That might
Chuck Martin was coming off the 6 straight wins, you know, something never been done. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And if you go...
Oh, Larry Fedora, I'm sorry. You have to include him, too.
If you look at... You look at a lot of these bowl games and you look at... You match coaching staff versus coaching staff.
Go back to Ohio State, USC. The score made no sense, but then when you replace the team names with the head coach, you're like, oh, right.
And then so the opening kickoff, Urban Meyer and his special teams. What happens on the opening kickoff? I think they got to the 12. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, here we go.
I've watched this game before.
Because Notre Dame never got past the 15 in the Fiesta Bowl a couple years ago.
Well, we will see what happens tomorrow in the Citrus Bowl. All three of us will be there. Pre-game instant analysis, post-game instant analysis, columns, report cards. Notebooks, game stories, Priester's preview later today, who and what to watch from O'Malley as well, this podcast, which you've already listened to. So all that coming on Irish Illustrated. Thanks for listening to our latest Irish Illustrated Insider podcast.